Welcome to Whispers of Oxenfurt, a podcast based on the Witcher universe by Polish author Andrzej Sapkowski. And I'm alive, I'm back. It's been a couple weeks, and this is what happens when I have to work full time. And if you don't have to do it, I don't recommend it. So we are finally to the last novel, Lady of the Lake, chapter one today. As if you've read it, which I'm sure you have, is very short, which means the summary won't be very long, but will be fun to do, or what will be fun to do, is going to talk a lot about King Arthur, Knights of the Round Table, Sir Galahad, La Morte d'Archer, all of that stuff. And that was a lot of fun to do. Love talking about that. And so that'll be today's episode. I will also have out, as I'll probably drop right afterwards, as you probably see in the feed there, is with the upcoming Gwent expansion, I'm going to start doing some mini episodes on the lore. And so far there's been one release that pretty much ties in right to the books, and that is the Prophet Lebioda. And so that we'll see. You should see that right there. It should be, you know, pretty short. Have recording that one after this one. And I don't think it'll be too much longer than several minutes. Most of them won't be that way unless there's just a lot to go over. And I'm not sure it'll be there. So with everyone that does that, I'll probably just do some mini episodes on that. And also stuff in the past. If there's anything y'all want to hear me go over, like one thing would be, especially with what that's based on, is the religion or certain religions to do. So like the Order of the White Rose that isn't hit up on most, I can kind of weave that in. So if there's any requests, by all means, ask me to do it. I'll kind of look and see if there's enough to kind of warrant it. And I can throw that out there for sure. So that's everything out of the way there. I'm not sure if there's anything else too much. I didn't really write too much down. So The Lady of the Lake, Chapter 1, begins now. Cirilla Fiona Ellen Rhiannon bathes in an enchanted lake, where she is joined by a knight, and not just any knight, but Sir Galahad of King Arthur's court, a knight of the Round Table. He listens to Ciri sing and bathe in the nude, and he initially mistakes her for a fairy, a spirit, or one of the folk of the hill, as the Picts and the Irish refer to them, or as the Saxons refer to them, as elves. He also mistakes her for the titular Lady of the Lake. And we will cover, you know, again, most of that later when we go over King Arthur and all that lore. He says all the lands he is in service to, but he has never heard of Temeria, Redania, Rivia, or Edern. He is ready to receive the sword, though. And, what now? Ciri replies. This sword? Oh, I will not let anyone take my sword. I get it, she finally said. Well, every country has its own customs. I'm sorry, Galahad, or whatever your name is, but I'm clearly not the lady I'm meant to be. I'm not giving away anything, and I won't let anyone take anything from me. They eventually work out exactly what is going on, and Ciri has teleported and landed in a strange land, which, of course, we know as our own, or at least the fantasy Arthurian land of our past reality. But, okay, now that we have that cleared up. Galahad says there are sorcerers here as well. Merlin and Morgana. Ooh, but she is evil. And I am from Camelot, and am heading there now. Some 10 days' ride. He calls her the Lady of the Lake again, and she says, please, stop saying that. When I entered the Tower of the Swallow, I landed in Elfland, as you say it. They called me that when I was there, and at first I liked it. Was flattered even. But I was no lady there in that tower by the lake. I was a prisoner. I would listen to your story, lady, if you would tell it. It is long, she said. We have time. It doesn't end well. This story, she said a moment later, wrapping herself more tightly in the Pictish rug, seems more and more like one without a beginning. Neither am I certain if it is finished yet either. The past, you have to know, has become awfully tangled up with the future. An elf even told me that's like a snake that catches its own tail in its teeth. That snake, you ought to know, is called Ouroboros, and the fact it bites its own tail means the circle is closed. The past, present, and future lurk in every moment of time. Eternity is hidden in every moment of time. Do you understand? No. Never mind. All right, so much to talk about and fun to be had by all. But first things first, let's get acquainted with Sir Galahad of Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines and corner scenes with footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
It really, really is a silly place. So two very notable things about Galahad is that he is the son of Lancelot, yeah, that Lancelot, and Elaine of Corbenic, who features prominently in Le Morte d'Arthur by Sir Thomas Malory. Galahad is also one of the three who attained the Holy Grail, usually considered to be the utmost important relic in Christian mythology. The Grail was the cup used at the Last Supper as they drank the blood of Christ, and if you are a Christian, depending on if you are Catholic, maybe some Orthodox, or you oppose a lot of them like a Protestant, that was the actual blood transformed. If you were raised in Texas, a Methodist such as myself, it was symbolically representing the blood. It was also used by Joseph of Arimathea to catch the literal blood of Christ during the crucifixion, as when he was stabbed by a spear from the Roman soldier, the blood, supposedly, if you believe in that dogma, was caught in the cup by Joseph of Arimathea. The Grail is usually known to be kept by the Fisher King. And I should say that at this point, this is not any kind of biblical thing. This is all just, again, Grail lore. The Grail is usually known to be kept by the Fisher King, and several Fisher Kings there have been known as. And this is a tiny spoiler, but a Fisher King will enter in the upcoming chapters of the book. The Fisher King, while also being a fantastic movie featuring Robin Williams, and I think his best work, I think it came out like in 91, but seriously, go watch it. It holds up some 30 years later and actually features some Grail lore. Again, I cannot recommend that enough. The Fisher King will grant the Grail to those who can heal him, and through some trickery, a Fisher King named Pelles fooled Lancelot into thinking his daughter Elaine is Guinevere. And he sleeps with her, and whoop, out comes Galahad. Galahad eventually goes to King Arthur's court, and along with Sir Percival and Sir Bors, attain the Grail by healing Pelles. A lot of times the Fisher King has a wounded groin, and healing that will get you the Grail. So back to Le Morte d'Arthur, Le Morte d'Arthur by Sir Thomas Malory. Again, it's a French name meaning the death of Arthur, but Sir Thomas Malory was a 15th century Englishman who kind of composed it and put them together and kind of did his own thing with them. It is widely considered to be the single most influential book or telling of the Arthurian legends. And I was introduced to it I think it was my senior year of high school, as it was assigned reading. I think senior year was the English that we did, because I know I did my end of the year report on Henry V and Henry V. And despite the Middle French, again, meaning the death of Arthur, Malory was English. Now, if there's one thing to take away from this podcast concerning medieval history, I want it to be this. So many of the common notions of what we think medieval Europe looked, acted, sounded like, or did anything likely comes from the influence of Victorian England, again from Queen Victoria. The era of the late 19th century was essentially a revival of the medieval period to some extent. Notions of chivalry and honor was revived to help quell the problems of industrialization, poverty, and lacking faith in the church. A thing I really won't get into here is also Christmas in America, at least. As we know, it was largely this Victorian, you know, kind of Dickens, A Christmas Carol kind of thing. And the influence of Victorian England on our modern thought of the medieval period still plagues us to this day. The general notions of unmasked peasants, or unwashed masses of peasants, and courtly love and honor amongst chivalric long-haired knights and fair maidens at court is, you know, a lot of times a crock of shit that has fused into notions of what people think they know about it. It's fun to do. You know, I like looking at those tapestries and all that stuff too. And a resurgence of King Arthur only made sense and Le Morte d'Archer was at the forefront. Again, though, that was written in the 15th century, but just had a large revival. Galahad calls Ciri the Lady of the Lake, which is most famous for giving King Arthur the sword Excalibur. Again, there are several different Grail legends, but another common one is Arthur pulling the sword from a stone, which occurs in T.H. White's The Once and Future King Tetralogy. And of course, it is also what is forms the basis of the Disney adaptation from the 1980s movie. Sir Galahad, having gained the Grail, which in Le Morte d'Arthur is never seen or gained again, I don't think, is attended to by angels, and he ascends to heaven. And here's the thing about that. In Christian tradition, only Jesus Christ has ever ascended into heaven, from what I gather. If anybody out there is into divinity or anything like that, please correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm pretty sure in Christian tradition, only Jesus Christ has ascended into heaven. This accounts for both Eastern Orthodoxy and Roman Catholic, as the Jewish prophets, Enoch and Elijah, as well as the Virgin Mary, assumed into heaven, but they did not ascend. The difference being Jesus entered heaven alive. It was literally taking him alive on this earth and whoop, just giving the old transfer, you know, kind of a little teleportation spell. Well, I shouldn't say spell. Into heaven. Whereas the other bodies were assumed in the sense of they died and then their bodies were taken there. As opposed to staying on earth and their souls just went, like their bodies, that's kind of what went to heaven. And that is in conflict with other Jewish beliefs that I believe they had others enter heaven alive as well, but I am not nearly capable and knowledgeable enough to speak on the Jewish mythology like that. And let's see, the one final note I have here is the great Michael Palin portrays Galahad in Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail, or Monty Python the Holy Grail. I don't think I even know the exact name of that. Which, after you watch The Fisher King, watch Monty Python the Holy Grail. If for some reason you have not seen, especially Monty Python, go see it. If you've never watched anything of theirs, please let me know what you think of it. Because I rewatched it again a little bit for this, and I watched it again in full a couple months ago. And it still is amazing to me just how insane that movie is. That it is just the most bonkers thing. And I remember watching it in high school and realizing, like, okay, it's okay to like a bunch of weird shit. And that's another advice for you. If you like weird shit, like it. Own it. So that's all I got on the Holy Grail on Arthurian legends. If there's any questions you have, anything else you know want me to talk about with that, let me know. I'll talk about this all day. And as you know, from if you've read ahead in the books, there will be more coming up. Like I said, like the Fisher King comes up. And we'll hit on a little bit of that, as Lady of the Lake is where Sapkowski definitely decided to blend a little bit of real-world mythology, real-world lore, into his own. And with stuff like this, it's very cool. Comments, questions, suggestions, send to witcherpodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter @witcherpodcast, and my Twitch link will be below. All right, so as I tweeted out before, given the hectic work schedule and everything coming up, I'm not sure there's going to be an episode like full on this every single week, but I will try to do at least, again, a short lore episode or do something to get out every week. But at this point forward, it's just kind of, oh man, when am I going to have time to really do it and make sure I get enough to make it worthwhile? So next time will be chapter 2, or could be some random one, and I guess we'll see what it is. Bye.